Turn to Proverbs 4 and verse 4. Proverbs 4:4. It says, "He taught me also and said unto me, let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live." So we just finished up with verse 3, which says that, "For I was my father's son." So the he that taught Solomon here in verse 4 is David, his father. His father taught him. And we saw there that David loved Solomon, right? That he had a special place. Solomon had a special place in his heart. And therefore, David taught him. And this is a sign of love whenever you teach somebody the right way to go. If you didn't love your children, then you wouldn't teach them anything, because why would you care, right? Why would I teach them the right way? I don't care what they go out and screw their lives up. It doesn't matter to me. But if you love them, you're going to teach them the right way to go, right? You want the best for them, and therefore you train them. Now David, though he did a good job with Solomon, he failed as a father training up some of his other sons, three of them, actually. One of them was Absalom. If you turn to 2 Samuel 15 and verse 6, 2 Samuel 15, 6, you probably remember Absalom. He tried to create sedition in the kingdom and steal the throne from his father. 2 Samuel 15, 6 says, "And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel." And this is whenever, you know, when people would come and he would stand outside the gate and say, "Oh, if I was judging the land, I'd right every wrong and I'd make everything wonderful for everybody," my paraphrase. And by doing so, typical politician promising the moon, right, he stole the hearts of the children of Israel. Not exactly a good son that's trying to steal your kingdom away from you. And then you had Amnon, and he was just as bad or worse. In 2 Samuel 13, 14 through 21, he was so bad that his brother Absalom killed him for what he did. He raped his sister, his half-sister, Absalom's sister. So yeah, he wasn't exactly a good guy either. 2 Samuel 13 and verse 14. "Howbeit he would not hearken unto her voice." This is to his sister, his half-sister Tamar, I believe her name was, right? Tamar, yes. "But being stronger than she, forced her and lay with her." And then in verse 21, you kind of get an idea of how David was not much of a father back in those days anyway. Verse 21, "But when David heard of all these things, he was very wroth." Well, that's great, David, but you should have been a little bit more than mad. If my son raped my daughter, I'd be more than mad. Like, you'd be getting the death penalty, which is what you should get, especially under that law, you get the death penalty for that. So being mad about it doesn't exactly cut the mustard. And then you also had Adonijah. 1 Kings 1 and verse 6. Adonijah tried to steal the throne from David when he was right at the end of his life, right before he died. And here's the problem with Adonijah. And really, the problem was with David. 1 Kings 1 and verse 6. "And his father had not displeased him at any time in saying, why hast thou done so? And he was a very goodly man, and his mother bare him after Absalom." His father never displeased him. And that's one of the jobs of a father, is to displease your children. If your children are always happy with you, you're probably doing something wrong, right? They should be unhappy with you some of the time because you tell them no when they want to do something, right? Well, David never told his son no. He just let him do whatever he felt like. And so Adonijah did whatever he felt like taking the kingdom from his dad when his dad was laying on his deathbed. Well, there you go. Now, but with Solomon, it was another story. With Solomon, David did his duty as a father, and he taught him in the scriptures. Because David says, "He taught me also." He trained him up in the way that he should go. If you turn to Ephesians 6 and verse 4, David finally got it right. This is a man after God's own heart, mind you, and he didn't figure out how to be a father until he was pretty much on his last kid, or one of them. I'll get to that here in just a second. Ephesians 6 and verse 4. It says, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." Now, look, I checked this out. It's not in the outline. I may put it in the outline afterwards. I'm not sure, but I was just curious about this, and my suspicions were correct. And that is that the other three sons, Absalom, Ammon, and Adonijah, came before Solomon. So David had to figure out how to get things right. If you look in 2 Samuel 3, 2 through 4. Now, this could go either way. 2 Samuel 2, 3 through 4. So it could be that a father doesn't get it figured out until the seventh or eighth kid, and then does a good job on the last one. But you know what happens more times than not? It's the other way around. They do a pretty good job on the first few, and when they get to the last one, especially if that last one comes way long after the other ones, and you're tired, and you feel like more of a grandparent than a parent, and you just don't feel like spanking them, you don't feel like telling them no, you don't feel like being the meanie, and you just kind of let him do whatever he wants, and he grows up a little brat. That happens. That happens a lot. But in David's case, it was the opposite. He screwed up so many times, and when he got to Solomon, he finally decided to do it right. But anyway, I'll show you here the other ones came first. 2 Samuel 3, 2 through 4. And then what happens also, if you don't keep a real tight rope on the older ones, every kid that comes after that learns all the bad habits of the older ones, and I've seen that happen too, where by the time you're on, number six or seven, they're getting to be pretty unruly and wild because their brothers and sisters that you didn't do the greatest job on are now corrupting them. So if you have a ton of kids, you might want to be careful about that too. I know none of us do in here. Anyway, 2 Samuel 3, 2 through 4. It says, "And unto David were sons born in Hebron, and his firstborn was Amnon," we already looked at him, "of Ahinoam, the Jezreelitess, and his second, Chileab, of Abigail, the wife of Nabal, the Carmelite, and the third, Absalom," there's the second one we're looking at, "the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur, and the fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith, and the fifth, Shephatiah, the son of Abital." David had a ton of wives, and there's another one here we don't need to read about. So anyway, here are the first three right here. Well, this is in 2 Samuel 3, 3 through 4. Then we don't need to turn there. We've already looked at it. But if you turn to chapter 12, so, many years have passed here, Solomon comes along. So Solomon came after these first ones. So that's why I conclude that David did a better job in his latter end. In Proverbs 19 and verse 20, it says to be wise and do good, be wise in thy latter end. Forget how the first part of it goes there. Proverbs 19 and verse 20. It says, "Hear counsel and receive instruction that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end." So this was David, wise in his latter end, not wise in his former life. That was Proverbs 19:20, in case you didn't get that. So from this, I conclude that it's never too late to make changes for the better in your life. Even if you've already got, David had a ton of kids, even if you messed up on all of them, and you finally get to number 8 or 10, and you think, you know what? I'm tired of screwing my kids up. I'm going to do a good job. It's never too late to change. Or anything else in our lives. Never too late to change. Even if you get right to the very end, today is the day of salvation. Harden not your hearts, the scripture says. So it says, "He taught me also, and said unto me, Let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live." So these words here, "Let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live," these are actually the words of David. Solomon is quoting David from what his father taught him. "And Solomon listened to his father's instruction, he remembered it, and then he repeated it to his son." So he's passing this down from one generation to the next. So his son is actually getting the wisdom of his grandfather, which his father remembered and passed along. I'm going to read you here a lengthy quote from Matthew Henry because I think he said it so well. He said, "What his parents taught him, he teaches others. Observe, when Solomon was grown up, he not only remembered, but took a pleasure in repeating the good lessons his parents taught him when he was a child. He did not forget them, so deep were the impressions they made upon him. He was not ashamed of them, such a high value had he for them, nor did he look upon them as the childish things, the mean things, which, when he became a man, a king, he should put away, as a disparagement to him. Much less did he repeat them, as some wicked children have done, to ridicule them, and make his companions merry with them, priding himself that he had got clear from grave lessons and restraints." I think Matthew Henry here must have been trying to compete with John Gill with these enormous sentences here, very complex. But anyway, hopefully you've followed what he's saying there. He's basically saying that Solomon, even though he was a king, even though he was a man, he didn't just scoff at what his dad said, "Finally, I'm out from under his roof. I don't have to listen to that old guy anymore and all his dumb sayings." No, he took those things. He remembered them. He cherished them. He repeated them. He appreciated what he had learned from his father. He was a good example to us. He says, though Solomon was a wise man himself and divinely inspired, think about that. He was the wisest man that ever lived, and he was a prophet, inspired of God. So remember that. Yet, when he was to teach wisdom, he did not think it below him to quote his father and to make use of his words. That's pretty powerful if you think about it. If you're the smartest guy in the world, you'd think, well, I don't need to listen, you know, what's my dad got to say? Because I'm the smartest guy in the world. Literally, he was the smartest guy in the world. But yet he could take something his dad taught him and pass it on to his son because it was good and true. I think about that. I remember some sayings that my dad taught me. He says, a lazy man would rather break his back than make two trips. And every time I'm loaded up with 14 bags of groceries coming out of the car, I think about that. A lazy man would rather break his back than make two trips.
But you still do it anyway.
Well, I do, but at least I remember the lesson. Sometimes I do make two trips often, remembering my wise old sage father's words. And then my dad did what Solomon did with his dad and repeated what his dad told him. So my dad told me, I don't remember my grandpa actually saying this, but my dad told me, my grandpa said it. He said, those that don't listen have to feel. And you probably heard me say that a million times. And I'll continue to say it a million times because I think that is a very true and profound quote. And then my grandpa also said, money is the short end of life, but everybody needs a little. So things like that get passed down from my grandfather to my father to me and now to you. So there's four, well, you're not a generation, but anyway, four generations, we'll say, of wisdom passed down in my grandpa's been dead for 20-some years, 23, and he being dead yet speaketh. So there you go. Let me continue here with this quote. He says, those that would learn well and teach well in religion must not affect newfound notions and new coined phrases so as to look with contempt upon the knowledge and language of their predecessors. You know what he's saying? Basically, if you're a teacher in religion like I am, you don't just have to come up with all this new stuff on your own and scoff everything that you've been taught, right? I'd be a fool and an idiot to do that. You teach the good stuff you've been taught. And then you study yourself and you learn some things yourself. Maybe you add to what you've been taught or you get a little bit different, little new nuanced take on it or something. But you take the good stuff you've been taught and you pass that along and don't think that you got to, you know, recreate the wheel. If we must keep to the good old way, why should we scorn the good old words? Jeremiah 6:16. Solomon, having been well educated by his parents, thought himself thereby obliged to give his children a good education. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, right? Golden rule. The same that his parents had given him, and this one way in which we must requite our parents for the pains they took with us, even by showing piety at home, 1 Timothy 5:4. So that's one way you can repay your parents, is by passing along the good things they taught you to your children. They taught us not only that we might learn ourselves, but that we might teach our children the good knowledge of God, Psalm 78 and verse 6. I think we may even get to that verse later yet today, possibly. And we are false to a trust if we do not, for the sacred promise of religious doctrine and law was lodged in our hands with a charge to transmit it pure and entire to those that should or that shall come after us, 2 Timothy 2:2. That which was committed unto thy trust, commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also, is what that verse says. Pretty close, anyway. Solomon enforces his exhortations with the authority of his father David, a man famous in his generation upon all accounts. Be it taken notice of, to the honor of religion, that the wisest and best men in every age have been most zealous, not only for the practice of it themselves, but for the propagating of it to others. And we should therefore continue in the things which we have learned, knowing of whom we have learned them. 2 Timothy 3:14. That old Matthew Henry was a wise old guy, I'll tell you. Prince of commentators, as they called him, and I think they're right. So his father taught him and said, Proverbs 4 and verse 4, let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments and live. So Solomon was taught to retain the words, which means to keep them in your memory. Look at Psalm 119, and then I'll define retain. Psalm 119 and verse 16. Says, I will delight myself in thy statutes. I will not forget thy word. In other words, he's going to retain it, because retain means to restrain, to hold back, check or stop, to prevent or hinder, to keep in custody or under control, to prevent from departing, issuing, or separating, to hold fixed in some place or position. So when you retain something, you hold it back, you don't let it go. So when you retain words, you keep them in your memory and you don't let them slip. You don't let them go in one ear and out the other. And when we retain God's words, then we'll keep his commandments, because that's what Solomon said right there in Proverbs 4:4. He says, let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live. So in order to keep the commandments, we have to remember them, right? We have to retain them. And when we keep God's commandments, then we'll live a long and happy life. That's what he said. Keep my commandments and live. That is the key to life, and to a long, peaceful life, is keeping God's commandments. Proverbs 3:1-2. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. So that is Proverbs 4:4, and that ends, as far as I can tell, that ends David's instruction to Solomon. I don't think the remainder of this is what David told Solomon, although there's not a quote there, so it's kind of hard to tell, but I think that was all his father said, and I think starting at verse 5, then Solomon starts to tell us his own wisdom that he got from the Lord. Well, is this thing going to work? Hopefully that recorded.